Hello, I'm Sean Kennedy, the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, or AJN. You're listening to a podcast in our conversation series in which we speak with nurses and others on important topics in nursing and healthcare. We also have a behind-the-article series, which are interviews with authors of AJN articles, and also a series called Reflections, which are readings of our narrative columns on personal experiences in nursing or with healthcare. You can find this podcast and all of our podcasts on our website, ajnonline.com, under the Multimedia tab, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and Google. Our content is accessible in print online on our website, and you can also find AJN content on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and on our blog, AJN Off the Chart. Today, I'm very pleased to be speaking with Beth Wathen, who became president of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses on July 1st, 2021. Beth has been a clinical practice specialist in the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit, PICU, at Children's Hospital Colorado, Aurora, since 2005. Beth, thank you for taking the time today to chat with me. Welcome.
Thank you, Sean. I'm thrilled to be here, and thank you for the opportunity.
It's always nice to speak to somebody from AACN. It's been sort of a tradition going way, way back. I started my career as a critical care nurse, and I think I've been to the, I know I was at the very first NTI, and it probably can take the prize for the number of NTIs attending. So it's always been a great meeting, and it's a great association. But before we talk about your role leading a major specialty organization, can you tell us a little bit about your role as a clinical practice specialist and your experience during the COVID pandemic?
Absolutely. Well, in my current role, my focus is really on quality improvement and clinical effectiveness and supporting our teams, our nurses, our providers, our interdisciplinary teams in that work, really, you know, with that focus on improved patient outcomes. And so I oversee all of our quality work within our PICU, and then I also oversee a number of system-wide quality initiatives, CODES reduction, sepsis prevention, et cetera. It's been just a great passion of mine, and I'm very privileged to do that work. With regards to my role during the COVID pandemic, it was really in supporting our teams and getting them up to speed in how do we care for these patients? How do we keep ourselves safe while we're doing it? And so, a big chunk of what I focused on and still focus on is sort of that, team member safety around code response and intubating these patients, and how do we keep our team members safe? Mm-hmm. So that was a huge priority. And then another priority was, as you've heard, I think many children's hospitals had to be prepared to take adult overflow patients. And so
I was wondering about that, if that happened to you.
Yeah, so we had a couple adult overflow patients, and, you know, we take care of adult patients within our current population, but this was a whole different effort. And so we had a massive initiative within our organization to really look at all of our policies and practices and clinical pathways and our EHR charting to ensure that we could bring patients, adult patients on board and care for them to that same standard of care. And so one of my roles was really help to facilitate the critical care component of that, bringing together our three critical care units and really critically looking at our capacity, our ability to increase capacity, and, you know, do we have the appropriate equipment, supplies, mm-hmm. et cetera, to care for an influx of adult patients. We've certainly had our steady stream of pediatric patients with COVID throughout this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And how about now? I'm reading that there are more people are seeing more pediatric cases now, probably because most of the older populations have been getting vaccinated and it just hasn't trickled down to the under 12. But are you seeing surges now in that population?
Yeah, we are, absolutely. In fact, our interim medical director shared this morning that our census right now is higher than our five-year average, where we would normally be in August. And we've definitely seen a spike this month. And I think that's part of our concern right now is we don't know, as you know or have probably heard, you know, that we really didn't experience the typical respiratory flu season in our children's hospitals last year because kids were at home. They weren't getting exposed to all those viruses. And now as we're heading into the fall, I think we're all a little bit worried about what that might look like.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about the this is also this complication, MISC in kids? Are you seeing, while it's considered rare from what I'm reading, are you seeing that also spiking?
We are, and we absolutely have seen a steady stream of those patients, both in our inpatient units and also in our ICUs. So yeah, that's been a really interesting, I mean, everything about this pandemic has been interesting and we've been learning so much, but, you know, I think it also highlights how children react to illnesses differently than adults, right? We can't assume they're going to react the same way. And I think this MISC has shown us that.
Yeah. And for our listeners who may not be familiar, it's MISC refers to the multi-system inflammatory multi-inflammatory syndrome in children.
In children.
Right.
You got
right.
It.
There's too many C's there. So, yeah. Well, here's hoping as we're talking here in early August that things start to improve before we hit the school year.
Agree.
Yeah. So now getting to your role with AACN, we know that COVID, of course, the pandemic taxed hospitals and staff, especially ICU staff, which are your members. What are you hearing from your members now?
I think they're exhausted, Sean. I think we were dealing with issues of burnout and moral distress pre-pandemic. And this pandemic now, we're, 16, 17 months into it. And now I think especially as it seems like things are heating up again, I think it's a mental and physical exhaustion. You know, we were sharing just an example of that. Just one of our nurses in the emergency department was just counting how many times per shift our nurses need to don and doff PPE in order to go into patient rooms. And it's a ridiculous number of times, and that leads to this exhaustion. And so I would say that is the biggest thing, growing burnout and exhaustion. And then I think the other issue is staffing. We had staffing challenges pre-pandemic, and right now I think we're feeling that crunch even more. So I would say those are the two top issues and concerns that we're hearing from members.
Are you hearing that a lot of members are, I mean, I'm hearing from a lot of hospitals and CNOs that I've been speaking to, and just in the conference that I just attended from, which was the International Academy of Nursing Editors, that they're all hearing too of and seeing people leaving. And Peter Burhaus gave some preliminary findings that supports that. Is that what you're hearing or seeing in your membership, that many of them are just have had it, basically?
Yeah, I think we're looking at that data, Sean, and trying to figure out where it's going to settle out. We're certainly hearing that that's what people are anticipating. And I know, you know, during the actual pandemic last year, a number of places saw decreased turnover, right? People stayed, right. They had job security. In my own work environment, I think the turnover has has increased significantly just in the past couple months. And so I think we'll be looking for those statistics to really understand, okay, so everybody's talking about our workforce leaving. Is that really panning out? Are we really starting to see that? And and so I think since we're still in the throes of this pandemic, it's kind of a moving target at this point.
Right, right. The theme you chose for the year is rooted in strength. I read your keynote from the May NTI, which seems so long ago now, in which you shared your own story of personal losses and struggles and how you found your own personal strength again. And first of all, I think that was courageous and admirable. And I think it certainly resonated with many nurses who are struggling today from their own experiences with COVID. I wanted to read one of the quotes from your speech when you talk about, you know, finding your strength and how nurses can find their strength. And you say in kind of towards the end that in looking at finding the strength that, and here's the quote, it's the roots of our community of nurses that give us our strength. It's a strength rooted in the fundamental beauty and power of what we do as nurses. It's a strength rooted in our connections with our patients and their families and partnerships with our teammates and colleagues. And I think that's so true because that's, and I think that's one of the reasons why we didn't see a lot of turnover during the pandemic because people didn't want to leave their colleagues in such extreme situations. You know, so we know that, you know, people are still struggling to find their strength. What are your thoughts on how now? And I know AACN's done tremendous work on healthy work environments. So what are your thoughts on what hospitals and health systems need to do going forward to help nurses heal and find their strength again?
Wow, Sean, that is such a great question. And I think it's honestly what we need to prioritize right now. I think our workforce is hurting. They're exhausted. And like I mentioned in that keynote, that the strength is there, but people may not be seeing it or feeling it at this point, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a number of things that hospitals and health systems can do to really, really prioritize well-being of their nursing staff and really help to nurture the resilience of our nursing staff so that they can thrive and that they can really embrace that strength and see it and feel it and move forward with it. So I think a couple things, lots of things, honestly. I think equipping our frontline nurse managers with training and tools to understand workloads of their staff and be able to assess their staff for signs and symptoms of burnout. We have a webinar for managers on coaching nurses on building resilience. I think our managers and our directors and our leaders need to lead by example and find a way to encourage lunch breaks and leaving work at reasonable times and really setting an expectation that the well-being of all of our team members is important. And then I think, you know, those proactive policies, encouraging staff to take their PTO, setting an expectation that team members should disconnect from work when they're not there, giving them that personal time so that they can pause and be away from that. I think peer-to-peer support is another thing. And I think we saw, as you mentioned, during the pandemic, I think one of the things that held people up and provided people that strength was the incredible interdisciplinary teamwork that we saw and collaboration. And so how do we nurture that peer-to-peer support, which I think is really meaningful for nurses? We created an online peer support group at AACN for nurses. And I think organizations have an opportunity to look into stuff like that. I think wellness programs, you know, I think it's a multi-pronged approach, but it's really got to be prioritized to really preserve the well-being of our workforce.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you about people being exhausted, and certainly staffing has always been an issue, and COVID certainly didn't help. And what I'm hearing is, you know, hospitals took such a financial hit because they had to close down elective surgeries and the other procedures that support some of the other services. And now in trying to bring them back, they're trying not to bring staff back that perhaps were furloughed. Many hospitals did a good job and didn't furlough people, but, you know, put them in different areas where they could help out. But some hospitals did furlough people and are trying to kind of increase their revenue before they bring people back, which is only adding to people's workloads and causing, I think, more burnout. So I'm hoping
that
continue.
It's a vicious cycle.
It is. It really is. Yeah. And a lot of us are kind of concerned about just what's happening with acute care nursing as a whole in terms of how this workforce is going to recover from this, especially if we keep surging like this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one more key component of this that I think is so powerful is ensuring that nurses' concerns and voices are heard. And I think we hear that a lot. And so I think the more that we can ensure that nurses are at those decision-making tables in the organization, that their frontline nurse voice is heard, that nurses are involved in staffing decisions that are being made. So I think that's another key area where healthcare organizations can prioritize around this.
Right, right. I recall back in the days when there was a big fight over whether nurses were allowed to close units when they didn't have staffing. And some hospitals were successful in getting that done where they just said, I can't staff this unit safely. And, you know, and I think we're perhaps that's one of the things that people need to start looking at again. But in any case, it's certainly a critical issue or tipping point, I think, right now. And one hand, nurses have gotten a lot of recognition, and hopefully that will translate into recognition of the value that they bring and the critical essential work that they do in hospitals. But that translates into more decision making at the policy table.
Absolutely.
So the last thing I guess I want to ask you is the Future of Nursing report came out. Of course, there were a lot of reports that came out last year, but the Future of Nursing report came out. And I'm just wondering, in terms of some of their recommendations, is AACN addressing that in any specific way, or is it just right now the focus is still on the pandemic and getting out of the pandemic, and so that's where most of the priority are?
Well, certainly the pandemic response and ensuring that we continue to be there to be able to support our nurses with what they need during the pandemic remains a top priority. You know, I think the timing of this Future of Nursing report is just so relevant with, as you know, the current social climate and the pandemic have really amplified racial, economic, and health disparities. We've all seen that. And I think this report really highlights so many of those issues that were laid bare by this pandemic, how vitally important it is to have a strong and healthy nursing workforce, the critical importance of healthy work environments, and then how longstanding inequities and disparities amongst minorities really were amplified during this pandemic. And so we're really pleased to see that health equity is a major priority focus in this report, and that will be achieved through strengthening nurse capacity and expertise. So what is AACN doing? We've invested significant time and resources to work on awareness and learning to be better individuals and a better organization And really, we're committed to affecting sustainable change around equity, diversity, and inclusion. We started this work a few years ago. We're also committed to helping our community learn about these systemic inequities and create a more inclusive and equitable healthcare system. At NTI this year, we had a number of presentations. So being sure that we're building that portfolio of education that can help better prepare our nurses to address this issue. Mm-hmm. And we had a number of presentations at NTI around reducing racial disparities in patient outcomes, providing sensitive care for our LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. bridging the generational divide. I think the other emphasis within the report around really strengthening our nursing workforce and how a supportive, healthy work environment is critical really just sort of underscores for us the importance of continuing to advance our healthy work environment standards and mm-hmm. to really take that to the next level and really ensure that people understand how they can implement the healthy work environment standards, because I think it's really fundamental that you need a healthy work environment before we can equip our nurses with these skill sets to really be mm-hmm. leaders and change agents in pushing forward health equity. So we've got a number. I would say the other thing, Sean, is that we bring the lens of equity, privilege, diversity, inclusion into everything that we do as an organization. And so we've been critically reviewing all of our programs and really trying to understand who does this program benefit, who does this mm-hmm. program burden. And so that's really the framework through which we're working right now. Mm-hmm. So lots of stuff. And I would say, I think with the recommendations in the report, it's critically evaluating those recommendations against what we currently offer and understanding which programs are hitting the mark on these recommendations, and are there little things that we can tweak to incorporate more content mm-hmm. around this topic. So I think it's the perfect focus for this report, and I think we're excited about that. And as with many, this is a long journey, but we're committed to moving forward on it.
Yeah, and I guess that the diversity, inclusion, and equity fits so well into the healthy work environment, so it's a good match for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for this conversation. I know between your organizational duties and certainly clinical responsibilities, this is an extremely busy time for you, and I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me about all these issues. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Sean. I really appreciated the opportunity, and it was great to meet you.
Well, take care, and hopefully we can meet at the next NTI in real time.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.